Well, happy Labor Day to everybody as we record this. You'll probably listen to this the day after Labor Day, which means you're probably back at work, which, you know, that stinks. But hope you, if you had the extra day off, you enjoyed it. If you're not one of the lucky people that got the day off, then thanks for working. That probably means you're an essential worker. And if not, you should probably talk to a union rep, I guess, and get the day off. But thank you regardless. Love union, especially teachers union. But that's enough of my soapbox for this week. I'm Justin Ladd. This is the Guardians of the Future podcast. We'll talk about all the stuff that happened in the Guardians system this week. Maybe we'll touch on a few key points of the Guardians' frustrating last seven or eight games. Obviously, the Orioles and the Mariners series that everybody enjoyed so much over the holiday weekend. We'll maybe touch on that. Maybe we'll try to avoid it. Anyway, this week we have Josiah Elmore with us, who I believe is the first ever IBI, GBI, Carolina League correspondent. I don't know if we've ever had anybody covering the Carolina Mudcats when they were the Guardian Indians affiliate, and we certainly didn't have anybody covering the Hillcats affiliate or the Hillcats or the other Guardians affiliate. So welcome to the show, Josiah, and welcome to being the first affiliate or first reporter covering the Carolina League for our site. That's it's quite an accomplishment, I guess I would say. Maybe some people look at it other ways, but I think it's a great accomplishment.
Yeah, thanks for having me. It's been super cool, mainly because, you know, like you said, y'all haven't had anybody. So a lot of the players and the management have really enjoyed having somebody there just covering the team.
Yeah, I didn't realize it. I know there's been some other outlets down there that do cover the team. I'm trying to think of, you probably know better than I do. I know there was one guy named Damien who I was like, I would talk to on Twitter, who he's
The News in Advance.
That's who it is. Yeah, Damien used to cover the Hillcats. I started following him, but now it looks like he just covers Liberty. So you are the one and only.
They basically dropped all coverage too. So really this year it's just been me, which is kind of fun.
It's a great time to get the sports writing, let me tell you. It's never been better. speaking of that, Josiah, we were just talking before the podcast started. You've got one semester left of college, so great things ahead for you. You've done a great job this year, and hope you find your way in the sports writing, sports media world. But kind of tell everybody, you know, about you and how you kind of find us and what you've been doing this year and what you hope to do in the future.
Yeah, so like you said, I'm wrapping up at Liberty, graduating December. And actually, the way I heard about this opportunity was the Hillcats broadcaster, Jason Pruill, was my GA for one of my classes, and we kind of became close. And then I told him about the Hillcats job opening up, and then as soon as he got the job, he heard from you, and then so it kind of just worked itself out that we'd be working together again. But yeah, so wrapping up at Liberty, you know, looking for jobs. I really enjoy doing radio, but radio's not the most growing field, so kind of just trying to find my way somewhere in the sports media world and go from there.
Yeah, radio, I've been all over the place too. It can be a crazy place out there for sure. But, you know, it's much better for you if you can put everything on your resume, writing, video, radio. If you can do it all, at least you find yourself in a good spot post-graduation to do anything that's out there that strikes your fancy or that someone's looking for an opening, get your foot in the door. Because that's the only way to do it is to find people who know you, which is, you know, how you found this opportunity, how he found you, and how Jason found the Hellcats. That worked out really good. We've had a great year so far. So, yeah, let's kind of roll through things. So we'll start with Cody Morris real quick. First career start in the majors. Took Zach Plesac's spot after he went on the IL, and he thought he was going to be a reliever for the September as a September call up for the stretch run. Turns out he is going to be in the rotation again this week. So definitely change of plans for him. He gave up three runs, two earned, walked a pair, struck out three, allowed a homer to the Mariners on his opening start. Thought he looked all right. He was in the mid-90s with his fastball. Thought he was really fastball heavy. I know he got a strikeout with one of his changeups. It looked pretty good. Threw some cutters. I thought he didn't throw a curveball a lot, but I was really unsure how his arsenal was going to look in the bullpen. And even though it was a start, it was only two innings, so didn't get to see, I think, the full arsenal on display from him. I think we'll see a better things next time out as he gets into being a starter. We'll see how many pitches he can go by then. He was on the minors, so I don't really know what's going to happen with the other spot. Savion Curry made Aaron Civale's scheduled start. He is back in AAA after having some issues with control, which is uncharacteristic of him, but I'm sure he'll be back. Connor Pilkington remains on the roster. He pitched in long relief. I assume he'll be an option. Maybe Hunter Gaddis is. I'm not sure. We'll see how that last spot goes. Looks like it's going to be McKenzie, Bieber, Quantrill, Morris, and then we'll figure out who the fifth is another time. I'll have to figure that out. So September call-ups, as we found out last week, were Cody Morris and Ernie Clement. Clement hasn't played yet, and it looks like he will be finding more time on the bench as Tyler Freeman gets more playing time. He's playing tonight against Kansas City. He already has a big hit. So I don't know. I guess if they're going to make a September call-up, who's going to sit on the bench and not play? It might as well be Ernie Clement because there's no point in calling up a Will Brennan or a Bo. I mean, I guess Bo Naylor could benefit from sitting, but I guess we'll see. Maybe it won't be Clement all month. Maybe it'll be somebody else. But if they're going to call somebody up just to sit, I guess Ernie Clement's the right choice because a Will Brennan or a Gabriel Arias probably doesn't benefit a whole lot, and neither does the team benefit by sitting on the bench. So we'll see. I like how Freeman's played lately. Rocchio had a good week for Columbus. He had a couple homers. Was our player of the week for the Clippers notebook. Go check that out at the website. George Valera had a grand slam. That was good. Logan Allen had an important start for Columbus. Bounced back. He had a really short outing last week. Didn't get out of the first inning this past week. He goes 5 1/3, strikes out 5 and shutout innings. Super important for him. And Carlos Vargas also got a promotion to AAA with all the pitching fluctuations. He looked good in relief there. Was up to 101. Had a strikeout slider, so good to see him in the relief role. Doug Nikhazy got at the double-A this week. He got in the second inning, had 7 hits, 7 runs, didn't strike anybody out. It was about 91, 92 at top, so going to be some time for him to settle in there, but that first start wasn't great. Gavin Williams and Tanner Bybee, we'll talk about at the end, but both of them had dominant starts again, no surprise. Angel Martinez, another great week at Akron. He looks really good. And we'll get to Lake County real quick. Tommy Mace only pitched a third of an inning, struck out the only batter he faced. He came out with a finger injury that's been plaguing him all season long. Status is to be determined. But the Captains went on to win 8-5. That's really impressive for them as they march toward a playoff spot. Can't believe they won a game with their starting pitcher only pitching a third of an inning. That's pretty impressive. I think shutout one hitting has been good, but it's been a bunch of different hitters every night. Corey Holland's been hitting some. They got a home run from Cesar Adrago. And then the pitching has been pretty good, and that's where we'll bring Josiah in. We'll start with Will Dion. Really impressive first start in Lake County. He looked like he didn't miss a beat. Going to go to the game logs real quickly here and get Dion. But, yeah, 6 2/3 innings. So he pitched in the seventh inning, struck out 9 against a very good Great Lakes lineup, 4 hits, an earned run, and a walk, and a homer. Josiah, considering you saw Will Dion earlier this year, are you surprised that he was about as good as he's been all year in his first high A start?
No, not really. I kind of expected him to get called up a little bit sooner. I get kind of why he didn't, but no, it doesn't surprise me that he didn't have, you know, any flaws in his transition. Really, his last couple starts in Lynchburg, you could tell he was really ready. He was firing on all cylinders. He had 2 10K performances in July. So, you know, I think he was ready, and it doesn't shock me at all.
Yeah, he's had good stuff all year. I will say, and I'll ask you because you've seen him a little bit in person. I haven't seen him in person yet, and the numbers obviously speak for themselves. But his dominant performance at Great Lakes, you know, he's – I think the highest he hit was 88, maybe 89. 9 strikeouts. He's getting swings and misses the fastball. Obviously, the curveball's great. The changeup's good. Like, when you're watching him – how does he dominate hitters only throwing like 88, 89? I don't understand it, but it works.
Yeah, that would be his biggest knock is he can't hit the 90s really consistently with his fastball. I think he just is one of those kind of pitchers that can just locate pitches really well, and his curveball is nasty enough to get people to chase.
Yeah, the curveball has been his bread and butter this year, and I know I talked to him earlier this year for a feature at the News Herald if you haven't seen that, but he's trying to, you know, throw the curveball less because he knows the other teams are looking for it. And of course he knows the other teams watch him and they think of him, oh, he's the Kershaw guy because he has the Kershaw mechanics. What was your reaction to that? I'm sure you hadn't really, if you had seen him before this year, you didn't know much about him. But when you saw him pitching this year, and you saw the mechanics, what were your thoughts when you first saw that?
Well, I mean, it kind of shocked me because, like you said, Kershaw's known for it. You really don't see it that much. And it was one of the, it was almost kind of like deja vu when I first saw him because I was like, I've seen this before, but I don't know where. And then, you know, then I read your article about it. And I think I read maybe the LA Times did one too.
Yeah.
One of those bigger newspapers did one. And I was like, wow, okay, so this is where he's getting it. And I think it does kind of throw batters off a little bit because you're not used to that pause.
Yeah, that definitely does help him. He said it was, you know, obviously to help him with control. He wasn't trying to like imitate him, but he said it helped him with control. And it's amazing to think that how good his control is now. Because, I mean, I feel like he's got some of the best control in the Guardian system now, which is obviously a good system. And, you know, he didn't have that before this pause that he worked on in the Kershaw mechanics. So it's amazing how fast that he has been gone to a control pitcher. Because I'd be interested to see how good he was before the mechanics, because obviously we know the velocity is not really there, but man, with the mechanics and the pitches, he's been incredible. It's unbelievable.
Yeah. I would say something kind of interesting to note about him. Only 4 wild pitches this season. So definitely can really, really control
Every
ball game he's in.
Yeah. I wouldn't have guessed that. I mean, he's not had any issues with control this year, and obviously keeps the walks down, but it's not even just control. I feel like for him, it's also got to be command, right? I mean, control, you can throw your pitches for strikes. That's fine. But when you throw 88, I know the stuff is pretty good. I guess I should say off-speed stuff. But when you throw 88, you can't just say, okay, well, I throw strikes. You have to be able to put the ball where you intend to put it. You can't just throw it over the plate and hope for the best. You've actually got to hit your spots at the top. And I know he likes to live at the top of the zone. I'm sure you saw a lot of that this year, that the fastball high and then the curveball low, right?
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, season him and, you know, we'll get into a little bit more, but Tyler Thornton does basically the same thing.
Oh yeah. I want to get your thoughts on a ton of relievers down there. Cause I think the bullpen in Lynchburg has actually been pretty fascinating this year. So let's get through a few more pitchers. So Jack Leftwich, I'm sorry. We should get to Rodney Boone. Rodney Boone was the first arm, second arm. Was he promoted before Leftwich or after? I can't remember now.
He was before. He was the first one.
All right, so Rodney Boone, I've yet to see in person. I've seen a little bit of video, but I haven't caught him at home yet just because of the schedule. But what have your thoughts been on Rodney Boone so far? And do you think that he made the most sense as the first promotion out of there?
Yeah, it did. He was definitely, when he was here, he was the ace. And it made most sense for him to go, you know, when he was in Lynchburg. I don't want to say he didn't belong in low A, but he was dominating. And so there was really nothing left for him to prove there. So it made sense for him to come up first.
Yeah, you can always tell those guys that are kind of a cut above the rest of the level. It stands out immediately, especially at the lower levels. I think double A is where you start to see things blend together. But at low A and high A, you can really right away tell, like, okay, this guy clearly is too good for this level. He's got to go soon. So Boone must have showed that pretty quickly. So I haven't seen him, but man, Jack Leftwich has been really impressive to me this year. He's continued to throw, you know, in the mid 90s consistently. I thought the slider was good, and I really like his mentality. Him and Tommy Mace. I know Mace didn't start in Lynchburg, but those two guys went to college together. And I thought, okay, Tommy Mace will be a quick moving starter, and Jack Leftwich will be in the bullpen. And Mace has had his moments, but he's been hurt a little bit with the finger injury. He's been inconsistent. He hasn't missed bats. And I would say Jack Leftwich, just like Will Dion, he's had a couple of bumpy starts in Lake County, but man, he got to high A and he just continued to roll. He's had some of the best stuff on that staff, and they've had a lot of good pitchers up this year in Lake County. So what were your thoughts on Jack Leftwich when he was down in Lynchburg?
He always struck out a lot of batters. I mean, 84 strikeouts in 14 games. You know, and 4-2 as a starter. You know, he was always, right after Boone left, he stepped right into that ace position and just dominated again in Lynchburg. And so it was time for him to come up too. I mean, really, I feel like every pitcher I've watched at Lynchburg, in Lynchburg, you can really tell there's some that it's like, okay, if the Guardians, you know, system wasn't so deep, they wouldn't be here. They would have already moved up.
Yeah, that's definitely been the thing. A lot of guys have continued to pitch in Lynchburg just so they can get innings. There's just a big backlog, and things have started to unclog a little bit as the year has gone on. But I would say even now on the staff, there are still pitchers down there that probably have been better or at least good enough to get a promotion. Another guy that I think a lot of people don't know about, I guess, I don't know, should we get into the pitcher? Continue with the bullpen, continue the pitcher? Should we move on to hitters? Where do you want to go next?
We can keep with the pitchers. That's good with me.
All right, let's go with Elvis Jerez, because I feel like that's not a lot of people know about. I didn't know a ton about him until I saw him in Lake County, but obviously another guy who's promoted. I know he kind of worked as the closer in Lynchburg. He's kind of been sharing the closer's duty in Lake County with Trey Benton, who I think you also saw this year. So
yep.
Who do you like? I mean, what do you like about those two pitchers, and what have you seen from them?
I really like Jerez because, you know, 10 save opportunities, got 9 saves. So he was always very consistent when he came out for a save opportunity. 40 strikeouts in 28 innings pitched, you know, always struck out a lot of batters. You know, he was always that guy that when he came out of the bullpen, you weren't worried, is he going to have his stuff today? Most of the time, he had his stuff. And then with Benton, you know, similar deal, very good at closing out the game, which at times, you know, that's really what Lynchburg needs because they're kind of a small ball team. They're not going to score you a ton of runs. So in those tight ball games, you really need to trust your closers to close you out. So both these guys did a great job when they were down in Lynchburg to do that.
I've seen Jerez's fastball hit like, I want to say 93, 95. Is that a track about the high end for him? And what about his off-speed stuff? Because I think I've only seen a slider, but I'm not really 100% sure about that.
Yeah, that's about right. Off-speed, you know, probably mid-80s. Sometimes his curveball would get down into the 70s, I'd say. But, you know, his fastball wasn't super fast, but he would get it there.
Yeah, it kind of looks like it's tough to pick up just where it comes from. It's from that high release point. That makes it really play well up in the zone. And I think Benton's it's kind of similar pitchers then, right? They both have the high release and kind of that low to mid-90s fastball and a slider.
Yep, very similar.
All right, and then how about this one? Since we're sticking with the bullpen, here's a guy I got asked about by somebody yesterday. Was Sergio Murillo? I'm not sure. What the pronunciation is there? Murillo? Okay. Another guy with a ton of strikeouts this year. Is that a guy that, you know, is he still in Lynchburg because they don't have room for him in the bullpen in Lake County? Like, is it, I don't know, smoke and mirrors? Like, what does the stuff look like? Because I have yet to see him on any kind of video, to be honest with you.
I would say it's, again, one of those situations. If the Guardian system wasn't so deep, he'd probably be up further by now, but just, you know, it is what it is. He's just, this is the best place for him to get innings. One knock on him occasionally, but this was, you know, further or a little bit earlier in the year, he would get jumped on, like let up 5 runs against Charleston in July. But other than that, I mean, pretty solid, nothing really to knock on, just better for him to be down here to get innings than to be up in Lake County and not getting as many innings.
So is the stuff good? I mean, the strikeout numbers would suggest the stuff is good. I mean, I think there are I think in that league, and I've we could dig into the numbers a little bit, but it seems like pitching in that league this year outside of Lynchburg has been kind of tough. Like, I feel like they probably have the best pitching staff, but, you know, I look elsewhere and I feel like there's a lot of guys in that league that don't control the ball really well. So you have a lot of walks. And obviously that hasn't been the case for most Lynchburg pitchers. So, I mean, is this a guy who essentially has good control and he's dominating hitters with the fact that he can throw strikes in that league? Or is this a guy whose stuff is, you know, legitimately bat-missing stuff?
Oh, it's bat. I mean, it's bat-missing stuff. His fastball, I've seen hit 97, and he'll stick in, like, the high 90s. So he makes people miss. And you're right about the Carolina League. I've seen a lot of pitchers in it this year where you can tell there's a difference in the Hillcats and them because their pitchers will come out there and they will struggle mightily. And then the Hillcats, you know, there'll be games when, of course, they struggle mightily. That's how, you know, baseball works. But for the most part, the Hillcat pitching has been very consistent.
Yeah, I was looking really early in the season. I just, you know, I see the Hillcats take a ton of walks, and their pitching staff was leading a lot of categories, I think, in strikeouts early on. They might still lead the league in strikeouts, but it just does seem like their pitching has been a cut above everybody else's this year. Are there any pitchers I haven't brought up that you think we need to talk about this year, that you've seen this year, that either are already in Lake County or are still down there? I mean, there's a ton. I know Trenton Denholm has been better lately. Oh, we didn't talk about the relievers that you mentioned earlier. So Zach Pettway and Tyler Thornton, those guys, I know they've had some kind of hiccups here and there, not surprising considering their age. And but it seems like they form a really nice back end of the bullpen together.
Yeah, I really like Thornton. He's more of like a lengthy guy, so his motion is very long. But, I mean, he'll hit you in the high 90s, you know, 95, 96, and then his, you know, off-speed stuff, he drops you down into like 78. And it gives batters fits. I mean, he's had some struggles, but he strikes out a lot because, you know, the batter's expecting – they see two pitches that are in the mid-90s, and they're expecting it again, and then it's 79. So he's very that similar, throws you two or three high speed, and then comes back and hits you with a changeup. And then Pettway, after he's come back from his injury, he's been basically a different dude. He's really improved since then, and I think he's probably going to continue to improve.
Yeah, I like the delivery he has. It's a very different look. I mean, they have a lot of – we talked about a lot of the pitchers in that staff having that really high release point. And I think Thornton's kind of a lower release point kind of guy. So I feel like that gives teams a very different look, and that really helps him too.
Yeah, for sure.
I know Trenton Denholm's gotten it back together lately. He had a rough patch. I said kind of a rough season overall, but he's had some moments this year. I want to get into Ryan Webb too, because I know you've seen him. Have you seen much of Reed Johnston? Because there's a guy, to be honest with you, coming into the year, I thought, you know, this is probably a two-pitch reliever, and I don't really know if I like the delivery. It's kind of lengthy, like you mentioned with the other guy. And but, man, he is just taking the ball. I know you got one start skipped last time out, but or two times ago, but that guy just continues to miss bats. I mean, I think he had back-to-back outings this year where he struck out, what, 10 and 11? I mean, that guy, I total surprise for me. I was not expecting that from him this year.
I think he's been kind of a surprise for a lot of people, just in the fact that, like you said, a lot of people weren't expecting much from him, but he's really kind of settled in nicely. Looking at his stuff right now, 115 strikeouts and 106 and a third innings pitched, you know, 46 earned runs this year, 3.8 ERA. His record, not the best, 4-5, but, you know, a lot of the games with the Hillcats, I don't know, the Hillcats in general can be inconsistent. And so sometimes your starting pitcher gets out there and they play their butt off and their bats are cold. And then sometimes it's vice versa where the bats are scoring 13 runs and the pitching staff's giving up 14. So he's been a nice surprise. And I think if he can just continue to play at a more consistent level, he could pan out in the future.
Have you seen much from him? I don't know how much you've seen of him in person, but have you seen much from him in the way of a changeup? Because I really like the fastball slider. Those look like two really good pitches that play off each other. I guess I'm wondering, does he have a third pitch that is going to help him against lefties in the future?
Yeah, I can't say that I've seen too much of a third pitch so far. I mean, fastball's not bad, but it's not great. So
talking like like 93, 94.
Yeah, right around in there. He definitely needs to develop a third pitch if he wants to, you know, continue to progress through the system.
Yeah, that was kind of my thought too this year. Was I'd seen them. I mean, impressive that he's essentially racking up these strikeouts with two pitches. I don't know. I'm sure he has like a changeup, but I'm sure maybe it's not really well used or it still needs to be developed. But you know, if he's only got the two that he's really relying on, it's impressive that he's missing bats the way he has so far.
Yeah, like I said, just I think the biggest thing with him, developing the third pitch and staying consistent.
Yeah, and he's a little bit old for the level too, but like you said, maybe in a guy that probably would be also up in Lake County if they had room like everybody else. I know you saw Ryan Webb. I think you saw one of his good starts. I remember seeing your tweets about it. He was pretty good that night. Guy coming off of Tommy John. I had a lot of high hopes for him. I feel like it's been kind of a struggle for him to get back into the swing of things. The control's not there. And the velocity seems like it's not as good as it was before. I think there are some starts where he was like 93, 95, but it seems like it's mostly, what, 91, 92. But I know, I want to say the start you saw of him was actually pretty good.
Yeah, the start I saw of him, I believe it was 12 strikeouts. I mean, he really dominated, and it was his best start of the season. And then I was talking to Jason, the broadcaster. They went on the road right after the start, and it was coming back up to his turn to start again on the home series. And I was like, oh, you know, last time I saw him, he was great. And he was like, yeah, he got like one inning of work on the road trip, got roughed up. And so I think that's kind of been his story. Like, he'll show a flash and then he gets roughed up, and he'll show a flash and get roughed up. But so, and like you said, coming off the Tommy John, it really has just been a struggle for him to stay consistent.
You're going to have some inconsistency. So as long as it seems like, you know, we've seen the flashes, you just maybe need to continue to wait for him to be all the way back from having that time off, because he, you know, missed a year. But if the flashes are in there, you hope that once he's kind of got some more reps back and his feet under him and pro ball, that the stuff comes back. So clearly it's in there. It's just they got to find it on a day-to-day basis or a start-to-start basis at this point.
Yeah, that's exactly right. It's there. It's just got to find it and get it. Got to contain it consistently.
I won't get into Josh Wolf yet because we did have a question about him later. We'll get to. But okay. So I think we've covered a lot of pitchers. Is there anybody on the list you think that we need to do a dive on real quick? I mean, I know I mentioned Denholm, and I know Alonzo Richardson has had maybe some good moments. But anybody else that stands out to you?
No, I feel like we've definitely covered the bulk of who's had, you know, pretty decent seasons.
Yeah. All right. On the hitting side of things, I'll let you kind of control where this goes. I got some names I definitely want to talk about, but why don't you just go through and hitters that are in your head that you've seen this year that you liked, whether they've already been moved up to Lake County or are still there. Who stands out to you first?
Frias stands out a lot. The thing I love about Frias is, this is more on a personal side, he's a very nice guy, and he's very funny. So, like, you'll interview him, and he'll be like, you know, I was just going out there to hit. And so sometimes he goes out there, and he hits amazing. And then there'll be another week where, you know, you'll write the notebook, and it's, you know, 1-for-13, 1-for-14. He is definitely, like, the hot and cold that could describe the Hillcats all year, where sometimes he's really hot and sometimes he is really cold. But he's one that stuck out a lot. He makes a lot of great defensive plays. Really, I think he's going to probably pan out at third base. Probably one of the ones in Lynchburg that could really stick there. And he's had a great year. Jake Fox has had a great year, really been kind of willing to learn multiple positions. He's played second, short, center. So, you know, he's kind of had a lot. And then Jorge Burgos is kind of their power threat. They don't really hit the home run ball a lot, but he's probably their best home run hitter so far. So those are three just like right off the top that all season have been consistent in my eyes.
So it sounds like, so Dian Frias, he is bilingual then, because I believe he's from Colombia.
Yes, he is.
So, yeah. So English is really good for him right now.
Yeah. Yes, it is.
Wow. Always a plus when those guys are bilingual, because that's super impressive. I can't say enough how hard it is to I don't know a second language, but I'm always impressed by people who can speak two languages. And you know, he's a 20-year-old kid and his first season away from either Columbia or wherever he's from, or Arizona. So that's impressive. You think third base is his best spot? I know he's played everywhere, so that's interesting. Jake Fox. You know, I've read some other places, and from the video I've looked at, I have a question about the approach. You know, he takes a ton of walks. That's obviously been a big thing for him this year. Do you think that he has a really good, because this is obviously going to come down to Carolina League pitching too, and where those other pitchers are at. But are we talking about a guy here who really has a good understanding of the strike zone, doesn't chase, or you know, do you see where maybe he's taking pitches that are too, that are hittable just to take them? Like, are we talking about maybe someone who could afford to be a little more aggressive at the plate, and maybe sometimes he walks because A, the pitching down there isn't, you know, throwing as many strikes as you would like, or is the approach maybe somewhat passive at times?
I would say, yeah, it is passive at times, but I think it is kind of a symptom of the pitching, because you see a lot of Hillcat batters do this. Actually, Frias does a lot, and so does Isaiah Green, where there's a lot of pitches where they probably could be aggressive and swing, but they sit back on them. And so I think he is, while he does have a good understanding of the strike zone, he is definitely a lot more passive than he probably should be. And I would say kind of in the later half of the season, he's gotten a little more aggressive, and you kind of see more pop in his swing, not necessarily, you know, showing up in the stat sheets, but there's been a lot more deep flyouts than there have been walks. And so I think they've been trying to work with him to be a little more aggressive rather than passive.
Yeah, I definitely think I've noticed watching this year, and I've seen the people write about it too. So I'm always just curious, like a 16% walk rate for a teenager in low A is super impressive. And obviously that's been good for him this year, a big part of his value. And, you know, it gives you a good feeling in the future of a guy who isn't going to swing and miss a lot and, you know, is going to take pitches where they should be taken. But you always have to wonder if, you know, maybe this guy is just kind of walking for the sake of walking. But, you know, I guess that, you know, the only way you can really find out is when he faces pitchers who throw strikes more consistently. But he can't do much about that at that level, unfortunately. Where do you think his best defensive home is so far? I mean, I think the outfield's new to him this year. So where has he fit the best so far?
I mean, like you said, he's new in the outfield. So center field has kind of been, there's been times when he's made great plays out there, and then there's been times where he's made plays where you can tell he's trying to learn. I still like him as a second baseman. He's been their probably best second baseman that they've trotted out all year. He's always consistent there. So I think probably second base would be where he, if he's going to pan out somewhere in the Guardian system, that would be where he's going to go.
And then you mentioned Isaiah Green too. Obviously another guy who has walked a ton. I have some questions about where the bat's going to go. Like I obviously, like you said, he's walking a ton, which is good. And I don't feel like he swings at a lot of balls, which, you know, that's always important too. But it feels like he could afford to hit a little bit better. Obviously, you know, all guys wish they could, but I don't know. His swing just kind of concerns me. I wonder how much contact you think he's going to make going forward. Our team's going to challenge him more and force him to swing the bat versus, you know, let him be selective at the plate.
Yeah, he's definitely an interesting one, because I think he probably would benefit from being challenged more and being forced to swing the bat some, because he has a great eye, but in the Carolina League, you know, there's not a lot of control. So he can sit back and just get walked. And then he has such great speed. It's almost like he's almost encouraged to just sit back and get walked, because once you get him on the bases, he's a really good threat. But I mean, he's walked a ton. I think I was reading, Jason was telling me this, he's like now third all time for Lynchburg Hillcats in walks in a single season, which is, you know, not that big of a stat historically, but it's just kind of interesting that, you know, he's having such a high walk number at, you know, single A. But yeah, he definitely could use some challenges to see if his bat's going to pan out or not.
Yeah, he has 93 walks this year and 105 strikeouts. So you reasonable to think that over this next series, the final regular season series, that he is going to reach the 100 walk total. So he's going to have 100 strikeouts and 100 walks. But I don't know. I would assume that high strikeout total for him, at least right now, has a lot to do with how much he takes pitches too. So I hope that's the case too, versus, you know, swing and miss. Because if you have a guy who's striking out from swinging and missing a lot, it's much more of a concern.
Yeah, I haven't seen him swing and miss a ton. Now, I will say the one thing that occasionally concerns me with him is it seems like he'll go out there at times and no matter what, the first three pitches he's swinging at.
Huh.
And it's like, I don't know if it's just like he's trying to get the bat, you know, he's just trying to be extra aggressive or what, but he's one of those guys that sometimes it does just seem like he's not really even looking where it's going. He's just swinging and hoping to make contact.
And for those listening, if you haven't read, Josiah did a feature on Isaiah Green. Seems like a real personable kid. I thought it was a really good interview. So if you haven't had a chance to check that out, it is on our site. Just search for Isaiah Green. It'll show up somewhere. Maybe I'll put the link in the description tonight. But seems like a real personable kid. It seemed like it was a really good interview.
Oh, yeah. Super nice kid. You know, really happy to be part of the organization. Actually said he's a lot more happy to be part of the Guardians organization than he is the Mets. Said just immediately he saw differences in leadership and management, and said he's really enjoyed his time with this organization opposed to his short stint with the Mets.
Interesting. Yeah, I think he was still in the Mets system when they had the old owner. So management there, not so great. So obviously some changes were needed there. So good for him for feeling comfortable in his new surroundings. You mentioned Burgos. I think that makes a lot of sense for him. He's got six homers, which, boy, not a lot of power in that league anyway. How about Will Bartle? That's a guy I've been really interested in the last couple of years. He kind of struggled last year, his first year down there, so I'm not surprised he's repeating. So it makes him a little bit older than some of the other guys in the league, but I feel like that's a guy I really like. He's probably different than a lot of the other guys down there because he does have some – I know, I guess he hasn't shown as much power this year as he did last, but I guess the power numbers are equal, actually. Wow. I guess it's a guy who I think should be showing more power than he has this year. How about that? I feel like that's a guy who has some power, but maybe it hasn't shown up in games this season.
Yeah, I can see that. He is a big, strong guy, and you would expect a little more power, but it's not been there. But he's done a pretty good job at, since he's an older guy, kind of embracing the leadership role down there. You know, always, you know, got a smile on his face and trying to encourage people. And he's been a solid first baseman for them.
We got some other questions too on Green and Carson Tucker that we'll get to later. And then we want to talk about them a little bit and Angel Janow as well. You saw Joe Lampe's first professional game, first pitch of his career that he saw, an RBI single. Hard to get much better than that. What did you see? I know he had a good defensive night too. So what did you see from your brief look at Joe Lampe, our first 2022 draft pick that made it out of Arizona into an official game?
Yeah, I mean, he, before he even stepped to the plate, made a great diving catch in center field, which he said after the game kind of helped him settle in a little bit, and then comes up and wanted to be uber aggressive and was, and made great contact, drove it into center field, brought a run home. You could see the speed, had another great diving catch later in the game. So he really looked like a really solid, you know, outfielder for them in what I've seen of him so far. And he is going to be aggressive at the plate and try to knock in some runs.
Then one more guy before we move on to questions or anything else I think we missed. Luis Durango Jr. I know he's been back in Arizona for a few months. Maybe if you have any insight on why he's not there anymore, but that's a guy I had some high hopes for this year. Obviously blazing speed, maybe the fastest guy I've seen in the system in a while, but what did you kind of take away from him the time he was there? And do you have any idea why he's back in Arizona?
Not really sure about why he's back in Arizona, but the speed is definitely there. I think maybe they kind of want to bring the numbers up a little bit. He was batting 189. Funny thing about him is there were so many times where, let's say he was on second and a slower guy was on third, there'd be times when you could see Omir Santos like kind of telling him to slow down as he was rounding, because there was a serious concern he was going to pass the guy, you know, at third going home. But yeah, don't have too much information about why he's in Arizona. My guess is they want to, you know, get him to get his numbers up a little bit and then bring him back at some point maybe, but I'm not too sure.
Yeah, I mean, I'm guessing the 189 batting average had something to do with it. I think he's 5'10", 135, so I guess he could afford to get a little bit stronger. Maybe that will help him offensively. Another guy who walked a ton, but yeah, probably the fastest guy I've seen in some time. I mean, nickname is Dash. That's pretty good, but I was, I don't know, he's only 19, so I guess we'll see, but I was really hoping for a more exciting season out of him in his first year at Lynchburg, because I don't know if I've seen a faster player in some time. he is a game changer. Although he did get thrown out 8 times, Isaiah Green, I think, has had better success on the bases, at least from a percentage standpoint.
Yeah, but both of those dudes just, you know, blazing fast, really great base runners.
Yeah, and I'd imagine if those two are in the outfield together, geez, good luck hitting a double or anything.
Yeah.
Any other hitters? Let's see if I can think of anybody who's been down there. I think we had a question about – nobody had a question about Junior Sanquin, but – okay, so maybe some backstory on Junior Sanquin here. Maybe you're not familiar with. Maybe you are. But so he was signed as a shortstop in his international signing year. I don't remember what year it was now. I think it was 2017. But, yeah, he was a shortstop. And his – obviously his MILB page says he is 6 foot 172. I don't know if you've seen him in person, but I just on video just not look like a 6 foot 170 pound shortstop anymore. Is that right?
Yeah, he's a big guy now. I mean, maybe he's still 6 foot, but he's definitely not 172. he's transitioned completely to first base. I haven't seen him play anywhere else other than DH, and so kind of him and Bartlett trade off DH and first base for the most part. But yeah, definitely not 172 anymore.
Yeah, that was that. I figured it wasn't accurate. He was, like I said, signed at shortstop, and I know I've seen him. The stats say he has made some starts at third base in Arizona before he got moved up. But yeah, I definitely didn't think he was going anywhere else. So definitely a corner only bat now. We can confirm. Not surprised with that. Any other hitters that? That we might have missed at this point. I wanted to ask about Wilfredo Antunez, but I feel like he hasn't played, and it might be hard to get an opinion on him.
Yeah, not too much opinion on him. Are we going to talk about Tucker?
Yeah. So we'll get into that. We have a couple questions here. So if there's no other hitters you want to bring up, we can definitely just get into questions because there's some questions about hitters we would have talked about anyway. Our buddy Chuck, a listener of the show and, you know, has his own podcast at the corner. Definitely want to check that out. Had some great interviews this year, with TJ Zuppi and our own Willie Hood as well. So check those out. Those guys do a great job fitting into the Guardians, podcast space. They're another good outlet. But his question first was on Isaiah Green. I guess you already covered your thoughts on them. So we don't need to do that again, but, what do you think he can be long-term if, you know, things pan out right for him?
I mean, I think he could be like an everyday, you know, corner outfielder, pretty solid defensively. I can't knock his defense at all. And it will be interesting, like we said, to see how the bat handles the higher level of pitching. But other than that, there's nothing I can – or wait, are we talking about Tucker or are we talking about Green?
Isaiah Green.
Yeah. There's nothing I can knock on him defensively. I think just as long as he can continue to have success batting, I think he's got a bright future ahead of him.
You think a leadoff type guy?
Yeah, I would say so.
And then do you think he stays in center field as well? Do you think he's a good enough defender where he can play center field every day?
His arm hasn't been tested as much, so I can't give you how I would see him from center field. I'd like to think probably, but I'd have to see it a little more. He just hasn't played too much in center field this year that I've seen.
Who's mostly handling center field down there? I mean, I know Fox has been out there and Durango was at some points. Has that really been the mix when Green's not there?
Yeah, Fox. Occasionally they'll put Burgos out there. For a while they had I'm blanking. They had a Drigo in one corner, Green in the other, and then Burgos or Fox playing center. So they've kind of rotated center field, but yeah.
Interesting. I look at the box scores every night, but sometimes I don't really, you know, think about who's playing what position. I'm really looking at the batting line. Everybody wants to know what in the world is going on with Carson Tucker. He has not had a great season. It feels like he has played, hasn't played. You know, he's been on the IL again. What in the world is going on with Carson Tucker? He was a first-round pick in 2020, and this point in his career, just numbers, but doesn't look great so far.
Yeah, I think, you know, the biggest, you know, this kind of cheesy saying, but they say it in a lot of sports, the best ability is availability. And yep. when you're not available, it really, and especially in a sport like baseball, when you kind of got to get your rhythm, you know, seeing pitches consistently and, you know, to have a great season. And he's just, it seems like every time he would get healthy, he would get hurt again. And really the main reason, and I'll be brutal about it. I think the main reason he's still seeing playing time consistently is because of his glove. I think if he didn't have he has a great glove. If he didn't have as good of a glove, he probably would not be seeing a lot of playing time right now.
Yeah, and he's a first-round pick, so I imagine, you know, that comes with some advantages as well. Yeah. Yeah, that'll buy you a little bit of favor for a while. Looks like he's mostly played – he's played equal parts second base and shortstop. Is there any – you know, you said you like the glove. Is there any position you like him the most at right now?
I mean, really, like I said, you know, second and – you said second and shortstop. That's – there hasn't been really – either of them have stuck out. He's been very solid at both positions, and I'll give him credit for that. His defense this year has been very solid, but it's just the bat is very – and you can tell he's very frustrated with it too. He wants to do better. It's not like he's just, you know, doesn't care. He just – for whatever reason, can't seem to find the grass, you know?
So probably fair to say you have concerns about the bat, but maybe, you know, hard to really give a good judgment on it considering the inconsistent playing time, you know, considering the injuries.
Yeah, I would say it's definitely, it might just be a year that you have to kind of just write off and see if next year, if he can stay healthy, you know, give him a couple months to kind of make a true evaluation of his offensive capabilities.
Yeah, that's a guy I feel like probably is going to be back in Lynchburg next season. I can't imagine that he's going to be ready for high A. But then again, I don't know who's on that roster that's going to play shortstop in Lake County next year. Maybe that's Angel Janow, who we will get to in a few minutes here. Josh Wolf, guy who had some good moments last season, his debut in the Cleveland organization. Now came up with Jose Green. This year, not super great. He's been on and off the injured list a little bit. Just what have your thoughts been on him this year?
Since coming back from injury, he's been, especially the one game that I saw right after, it was his first game back, he looked very solid. And so I think he's one of those guys, again, who's shown a lot of flashes. And if he can just contain it, he could pan out. Part of the question, I do think that he might be a better fit for the bullpen. I don't know that this is going to be a starter at higher levels. So I think maybe next year, I wouldn't be shocked to see him, you know, if he gets to Lake County to start, if he's in the bullpen and they try to work on that a little more.
Looks like a guy that, you know, he's listed at 6'3", 170. And we were talking about San Quentin definitely not being 170. Josh Wolf looks like he probably is about 170 and probably not a guy who might benefit from adding some strength to the frame, I would guess.
Yeah, I don't know about it. Maybe, but he's definitely, he's all of 170.
Yeah, he looks like he's still, I think he definitely could use some strength to the frame a little bit. Our own Stacey Hannon, who covers the Clippers, has a question about Angel Janow. So have you seen him yet in person, and where do you expect him to fit best if you've seen him?
Yeah, I've actually not seen him. Okay. I think I went to two games, and then it was like the next day was his debut, and I couldn't make it, so I haven't seen him.
Interesting. Well, yeah, he should get some playing time going forward. It's a little bit of a crowded roster. I mean, with Frias playing second and short and Tucker being there, and I guess in the days Fox is in the outfield, that probably opens up the spot for him. But definitely a well-regarded infield prospect. I hope we get a long look at here. I don't know. We'll see what happens in the playoffs. I'm not sure they'll turn to a guy that hasn't played much if they're trying to win a Carolina League championship here. So let's talk about that real quick. What do you think the odds are here that Carolina could bring it home? I feel like they have the best pitching in the Carolina League still, but I don't even know who they'd be facing. Looks like Fredericksburg's in first place.
Yeah,
who are we looking at?
I believe they would draw, if I'm thinking right, I think they would draw Fredericksburg first. Yeah, I don't know. They're scary because there's games when they're very consistent, and then there's games when they're very inconsistent. So I hate to be like this, but it depends which team rolls out. I mean, sometimes the pitching staff is dominant and the bats are cold, and then sometimes the bats are hot and the pitching staff is not dominant. So if they could put it together for, you know, a 3-game series, they have a legitimate chance to win this thing, but it's just putting it together.
Yeah, it seems like week to week, you're right. I think even week to week, they're very spotty. Like, I'll look at the schedule and I'll like, you know, wow, they went, you know, 5-2 in this series. And then the next week I look back and, or they went 4-2. And the next week I look back and they go 1-5 against somebody. And I'm like, wow, they just came back this week and looked like a totally different team. So that does seem to add up. They are, wow, -31 run differential this half. So I don't know whether or not to say it seems like the only hitter they've lost this year, I feel like that's been a major impact, was Milan Tolentino. So I got to guess that they miss the pitching a lot, even though the pitching's still pretty solid. But it would seem that they miss Tolentino more than they miss the pitchers.
No, I would say that the pitching rotation has kind of held them down a little bit, but I honestly don't understand. I mean, I've tried to talk to Jason about it, and he's like, he's kind of baffled about it too, because you just don't know who you're going to get. And that's not something you feel confident about going into a playoff series.
Yikes. Yeah, definitely. I mean, I guess they'll try to line up as best they can, and really it's going to come down to who they want to get the innings. But, you know, in a 3-game series on this pitching rotation, who are you starting in the first 3 games?
I would probably, let me go through this real quick and just make sure I got everybody I like. I'd probably start Johnston game one, Reed Johnston game one, Denholm game two, and then if you're in a game three situation, you know, see if you feel confident that Ryan Webb's going to give you what he can give you. And if you're not, then go with Juan Zapata.
Yeah, I see Juan Zapata's had a couple of good starts recently too, but that's, you know, the guy who was there last year as well. Not a guy I have a lot of hope for in the future, but yeah, he's been at least somewhat consistently. You're right, Ryan Webb for sure. You know, night to night, you're not 100% sure how long he's going to go. So that's an interesting way to go. Looks like Franco Alamán too has been a little bit better lately out of a bullpen row. Maybe that's a way to go. I don't know. Maybe go with the bullpen game. Go with, you know, like you said, Juan, or
that might be their best bet. They have some really great relievers, so maybe just go bullpen game.
Yeah, if you get to a game three, who knows? It's going to be interesting. So, yeah, I think it looks like they'll draw, like you said, who would you say they're going to draw the first round, it looks like, right now?
It's looking like Fredericksburg.
Fredericksburg, okay. And that's a team they've had up and down success against. I feel like early in the year they kicked the crap out of them, and then later in the year they haven't done as well against them. But that's kind of how things roll when you have two halves and guys getting promoted. So, yeah, -31 run differential this half. The first half for Lynchburg, a totally different story, +42. So, yeah, they scored 331 runs in the first half and only allowed 289. So, Myrtle Beach won the other division in that half. So, no chance they play Myrtle Beach, or is that the next round, right? If they win the first round?
Myrtle Beach would have to win their first round series. And Myrtle Beach has had similar struggles to Lynchburg. They've only gone 28-32 over the second half, and they're actually even second to last place in the South Division. So right now, Charleston looks like they're probably going to hold out and win the second part. So I would say if they go, I'd put more confidence in them playing Charleston in the championship series than I would Myrtle Beach.
Yeah, because they're in the same situation. Myrtle Beach has lost a lot of their key players too, up to promotions as well. So really just depends on who is still around for the stretch run, who hasn't been promoted yet, or who is healthy at this point. So All right. Anybody else we missed? Any other topics? I mean, I was going to ask you, too, what you thought of the coaching staff down there, how that's gone this season, just kind of the vibe around the team. How, what have you thought about that?
I think, I mean, for a first season coaching for Amir Santos, I think he's done a pretty great job. The players are very bought into him as a person. You know, you don't ever really see any grievances or anything like that. And most of the players I've talked to, he's a player's coach in the sense that, you know, he's not super strict on them, but when it's time to get to business, it's time to get to business. So I think he's done a really well job with his first year coaching.
All right. Well, yeah, if we haven't missed anything else at this point, let's move on to players of the week. So I have a very, very slim chance, depending on how the playoffs shake out and if I won this week, to catch the field. So it's Willie, it's you, it's John Elrod, it's Megan Hustling, who's been at Columbus. That's been our guest this year. So Willie in the field. The rest of you guys are 6-3-1. I am 2-7-1, not having a strong season after winning last year's championship. I went with Tanner Bibee last week. And George Valera. So Bibee, 6 innings, 4 hits, a walk, 5 strikeouts. Another great performance for him. George Valera, he did hit a grand slam at Columbus and a double. Had drove in 5, but for the week, just 4 for 22, a 190 batting average, 227 on base. So not a great week for Valera, even though he did drive in 5. That was good. Gavin Williams was Willie's pitcher last week. He went 6 innings, did allow 4 runs, but he did strike out 10. So a really good performance from Williams. He picked Will Brennan as his hitter. Will Brennan, similar to Valera, 4 for 26, a double, a homer, 3 RBIs, hit 174, 231, 348 for the week. No pressure, Josiah. And if you want to come back, if you want to come back on the pod, no, I can't threaten that. I was going to say, if you want to come back on the podcast, you'll pick me, but I won't threaten that. Because if Lynchburg goes deep in the playoffs, we want to have you back. But unbiased opinion, who had the better pick last week? It's a tough one.
It is a tough one. I'm looking at it right now. This is no bias. I think I'm going to pick you. I think you did have the better week. I like, the pitching stats. I'll go with you. The 4 runs, you know, if a guy doesn't give up any runs, then kind of gives the edge, at least in my opinion. So I'll go with you.
Yeah. Williams had the 10 strikeouts for sure. That was more dominant, but did give the 4 runs. They both did get the win for what it's worth. So yeah, they both pitched well enough to win the game. So that's what's important. All right. So Willie in the field moves to 6-4-1. I am 3-7-1. It's going to depend on how the playoffs shake out, how deep Lake County and Lynchburg get in the playoffs. And then I think Columbus has a shot at the playoffs, but it's they're going to need to do some work over the next few weeks, and then Akron is their chances are pretty slim. They'd have to really play great the last 2 weeks, but who knows? All right, Josiah, since you're the guest this week, you could pick any hitter, any pitcher in the system. It could be Lynchburg. If there's anybody else in the system you like to, feel free. So make your picks.
I'll stick in Lynchburg. I'm gonna go with Jake Fox. He kind of had a little bit of a down week, so I would imagine he'll bounce back a little bit, kind of his style. And you know what? For pitching, I will too, because since I'm the first Hillcats writer, I'll give him all the love, and I'll go with Reed Johnston.
I think that's a fair pick. His, you know, they skipped that start for him a week ago. I don't know if you knew anything about that either, but he pitched well last time out. So that's start, whatever they did to skip a start, he looked like he came back pretty strong at the very least. I'm not really sure why he didn't pitch last week. Did you hear anything about that? I'm not sure if you caught that while you were.
No, I haven't heard anything about it. Usually if it's, you know, injury related or something, Jason will kind of give me the little inside scoop. So I imagine it was probably just rest.
Yeah. First pro season, that does tend to happen. They'll definitely need to do that. Let's see. Boy. You know what? Will Dion pitched great in his first high A start. I feel like that's a safe pick. I feel like I have a lot of confidence that Will Dion is going to come out next week and continue to be the same guy he has been. Boy, hitting's a lot tougher, though, up and down the system. There are guys that are hitting well, but, you know, any given week could be interesting. I'm going to go with Angel Martinez. Angel Martinez is doing pretty well at Akron. He's settled in very nicely since he's got there and looks like he's getting very comfortable. So, actually, you know what? No, I'm gonna change that. I'm going to go with Micah Priest. Micah Priest has had a very interesting season, and he's had a lot of success for me this year. I think I've won a couple weeks where I've picked him, so... I'm gonna give Mike Capriz a shot, see what he does. I guess I've tried to get cute this year and really pick some of the niche players versus, you know, last week I took Tanner Bibee and George Valera. You know, I picked big names and it worked out well for me, but I feel like I've made a lot of picks this year, like Will Dion and Mike Capriz, where that hasn't worked out so well for me. So I should be trying to catch up and just pick the obvious ones, but I'll hope for some luck this week, I guess.
I've seen him enough to know. I think that's a solid one.
Yeah. I think he'll be safe. I mean, hey, George Valera didn't necessarily win it for me last week. It was definitely the Tanner Bibee pick that won it. So I want one safe pitcher and one a risky hitter. So we'll see. Anything we didn't get to as far as Hillcats are concerned that you think we need to touch on, Josiah?
I think we covered a lot of it.
I would say so. We're about an hour in, which is, you know, about normal for us. I did want to ask you, I know you're a Baltimore Orioles fan. This has got to be a pretty fun year for you because this is the first time and feels like quite a long time. And not as quite as long as the Mariners fans have had to suffer, but it feels like things are really looking up for the Orioles, especially after what they did to Cleveland last week. Did you watch any of that series?
I did, yeah. I got to see Gunnar's first home run. It was funny because the night before – he got called up. I was in the booth with Jason, and Jason got onto the broadcast and started talking about the Guardians beating the Orioles. And I was like, after the game was over, I was like, you wait, this is going to come back to bite you somehow. Like, oh, no way. And then Gunnar gets called up. He hits the home run. And I'm like, oh, look at this. So yeah, I did see it. And it's definitely an exciting time to be an Orioles fan. I mean, I'm getting ready to turn 21 and it's the first time since I was in like fourth grade that I really am like, feel like we can be competitive for a while. So it's a really exciting time.
Yeah. The last time the Orioles were competitive was, I'm sure this will bring up some bad memories, but was Buck Showalter leaving Zach Britton in the bullpen just to look very confused. So
yep,
that was about, yeah. Yeah. That was a weird one. Yeah. They look pretty good. I mean, yeah, Gunnar Henderson's been fantastic. Adley Rutschman's been fantastic. I feel like they had a great draft again this year. Boy, the Hillcats also just played Bowie, and gosh, I don't know if you caught any of that, but man, that lineup was full of exciting guys. They had Jackson Holliday, they had a couple of 2022 draft picks in there. What an exciting team, right? Not Bowie. What team am I thinking of? Why did I say Bowie? Bowie. What was that?
Delmarva.
Delmarva. That's right. Delmarva. Man, what an exciting lineup that is. I tuned into a couple of those games. That was exciting.
Yeah, it's for sure exciting. They're on their way, and hopefully it'll pan out. I wasn't a big Mike Elias fan for a while, but after this season, I'm kind of trusting it now, and hopefully it'll continue to pan out for us.
Why, since you did watch some of the Orioles series, why did the Guardians get shut down offensively from Jordan Lyles and Kyle Bradish? What happened?
Lyles, I'm not gonna lie, I think, and this is a little biased, but I think he's one of the best kept secrets in baseball right now. He seriously eats innings, like, and they've made it, like, the social media team and the players have kind of made it like a meme that he's going out to eat because he eats innings. And then with Kyle, he had the stuff in the minors, but it definitely shocked me to see that. And his last two starts, really, he's turning on. He did get injured a little bit earlier in the year, and since returning, he's been, I think, a lot of the pressure's kind of taken off, and so he's really been shining. And he'll probably, hopefully next year, become one of our quality starters in the rotation.
Yeah, I feel like I'm curious about where the pitching goes from here. I could see the offense for them taking off. I mean, you got DL Hall up right now, who I really like a lot. I was surprised to see them move on from, who was the kid, Zach,
Zach Kelly? Is that it? No.
No, the kid from, he's from Ohio. Zach, gosh, I'm going to really, it's going to annoy me that I can't think of his name, because he's from Northeast Ohio. He was a pitcher. Yeah, I can't think of his name. Why is it? It's going to really bug me if I can't think of the name. He had claimed off waivers earlier this year, though. I think they moved on from it. I was kind of surprised. He had a really good minor numbers in the minors, and he didn't throw really all that hard, but I thought for sure that they'd give him a bit of a longer leash. I don't know why I can't think of his name this season. That's really going to bug me now. Zach. Gosh. I'm going to sit here and Google this thing. I don't want to stop recording and just to go look at it, because I feel like
I'll get it.
Yeah, Zach Lothar. I was surprised they moved on from him so quickly. That was a guy I was really helpful for, but he had plenty of chances, I feel like. But he was a Northeast Ohio kid. I watched him pitch in high school, so that was helpful. He would get a much longer run.
Yeah, I think that's right now, that's probably the biggest offseason question for the Orioles, is they're going to need to find probably a third quality starter, because hopefully John Means will come back. You know, yeah, a lot of guys can come back better from Tommy John than they used to. They used to kind of be, you know, kind of a bad sentence. And I think they'll try to have Kyle step into the secondary starter, and then maybe try to keep Jordan Lyles around. But it'll be interesting.
Looks like Lothar cleared waiver, so he's still in AAA, and he's pitching not so great. I don't know. And then there's Grayson Rodriguez, too, who just came back, so that's exciting. I kind of forgot about him for a second there.
Yeah, he was one that right before his injury, it felt like he was just probably like a start away from getting called up, and then he got injured, and it just kind of threw the whole season off.
Yeah, we've seen that in Cleveland with Daniel Spino. He was off to a great start, and then that injury just has sidetracked him all year. It's been unfortunate, so... yeah, interesting. The Orioles are definitely interesting. That was a frustrating series for sure for Guardians fans. But I think the Orioles are no joke. No Trey Mancini, and they traded their closer. But Felix Bautista is pretty good. And, man, the rest of that bullpen, like Ciel Perez, and now they got DL Hall. I feel like that's an unsung bullpen out there too.
Yeah, it kind of shocks a lot of people. I think it's kind of a well-kept secret in the AL right now.
Yeah, for sure. All right. Well, appreciate you all listening this long. If you made it this far, shout out Josiah. Shout out your Twitter handle. If people aren't following you yet, if they're listening to us after an hour and they don't follow you, that would be weird, because I feel like these are the diehards and they probably have already heard about you from our site. But if they don't follow you yet, go ahead and shout out your Twitter handle or anything else that you want them to know.
It's Josiah Elmore 11, just all one word. So go follow me. I try to live tweet throughout the games and, you know, try to just promote all the content that I put out there for Guardians Baseball Insider on my personal one. So,
yeah, where else, what other work you have out there they should be looking for? I know you've been some other places too.
Well, right now I'm getting ready. If you're, this is probably very random if you're listening to this podcast and y'all are interested in this, but I'm getting ready to do a project on the 1999 Virginia Tech football season. They went to the national championship. So I'm going to have interviews with probably Frank Beamer, their head coach, and a couple of the other support staff and a couple of players from that season. So if you're a Guardians fan and a Hokies fan, I'm your guy.
That's a niche audience right there. I don't know. Virginia Tech in 1999. I'm trying to think of that was a Michael Vick team. So,
Yeah,
I feel like at the very least, you've got Michael Vick. That's something to look for. People are always interested in that dude, because what a strange career and what a strange life. So,
yeah,
definitely. We'll be worth checking that out. I'll be looking for it for sure. All right. Well, I appreciate you taking the hour out to do this with me, and appreciate all your work this year. You've done a great job. And, you know, like I said, enjoy that last semester of college. Don't let it go too fast on you. And, you know, hopefully we'll talk to you again if the Hillcats make a deep run in the playoffs. I think there's a, I don't know, it's probably a coin flip at this point, really.
Yeah. Well, thank you for having me on and for the opportunity this season. It's been a ton of fun.
Yeah, it's been great, especially having someone with eyes down in Lynchburg for sure. All right. Well, thanks for listening, and we'll catch you again this week.
Okay. Thank you.
Wow.